You may spend a lot of time every day on the computer at home or at work, and because of that, I know it is for me, maybe it is for you too, to talk yourself into needing the latest and greatest new equipment. Sometimes it's a great investment. Other times we find out sort of the new model or maybe the new software is not as good as the old. So Larry Mueller here, going to find out some more about hardware and software from Peter Green, independent computer consultant, and he provides a lot of great information and resources at infostar.com. Comes by once a month to talk with us. And Pete, great to see you again.
Always great, Larry.
We have some new products that have come out in the past year or so. Some of them were, you know, you think about the solid state drives. They promised faster speed and reliability.
Yeah, all those good things. And that sound great.
Yeah. How's it worked?
Well, you know, when Judith asked me, you know, about what this show should be about, and I started thinking about, okay, what kind of grief have I been through recently? And, you know, people would ask me about things, and then so I just started going back in time in the last 2-3 years and thinking about all these promises, and then looking at the stock market for some of these companies and how they've fared, you know, and the stock market, you know, is at record levels again.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking about my experiences in the last 2-3 years with, you know, newer technology. And, you know, that's what, you know, this show and, you know, what the Ideas Network about is sharing and, you know, sharing experience. And I got to tell you that some of the SSD drive technology,
SSD, obviously,
solid state drive, which is like a thumb drive or a jump drive, but taking it to the next level in terms of being being able to perform for a computer as a primary drive instead of the one with the moving parts that spins. So they were making them like 40 gigabytes of storage, 60 gigabytes, 120, 250. And then they got into specialty cards where they'd put these chips on special controllers and high performance. Now, those I've been okay with. Okay, that I've been okay with. But the ones that you pop in as the primary drive to maybe an Apple, you know, and I can't speak for who Apple is using, okay? And I don't know. There are a lot of different providers. There's OCZ and Kingston and SanDisk and, you know, Crucial and, you know, a number of other drive manufacturers that make these products. And some of them may be the OEM for others. And if you don't know what an OEM means, it's the original equipment manufacturer. So someone's making the production of the can of peas for 10 different companies, you know, putting the labels on that can. So, you know, I would put these drives in for the systems that I really wanted a bump in speed and I wanted reliability.
Yeah.
And I've come to discover, at least in my experience in the past, I'd say 2 years or so, that those systems have actually caused me grief, where they weren't booting up consistently or they were reporting errors. And I don't know if it's because, you know, you got to upgrade the firmware. They don't send note. There are firmware, software upgrades for these things, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But it's just been, you know, it's just kind of an issue with me all of a sudden. I'm working on systems that I expected not to get this kind of grief with reliability. And it's not so much the speed. It's really reliability. It's people want internet. People want their computers to work. People want their applications to work. And they want to use their system. And you don't have reliability, you can't do any of that.
No.
And that can get frustrating. Now, the on the flip side of it, with all the flat screen technology that's been out there for a very long time, it's been pretty rare that I've seen pixel problems. And, you know, the manufacturers actually allow for a certain number of dead pixels on your screen before you say, hey, return it, you know. So, you know, if you see a dead pixel, which means that it's that little dot on a flat screen that's not giving you color, they allow for a certain amount of dead ones before they'll take returns. So, reliability for flat screen stuff has been
pretty good
for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they are not performing so well in the solid state drive area, I guess.
Not as well as I would have expected. And I've actually replaced those systems with spin drives just because it got frustrating.
What, are there some new hardware items on the horizon?
New hardware items on the horizon. Well, I think things that are improving that are going to be really cool are, you know, miniaturized computers with glasses and, you know, basically you get a big screen. I haven't invested in this yet, but this has been around for probably 2-3 years where you can actually simulate a big screen on glasses, you know, and that to me sounds really cool.
You're going to be an early adopter on that one, when I
well, you know, when they, I forgot what the price point was. I'm going to start looking into them, but I think they were like in the $250, maybe $500 range. I was like, it's a little bit too high much for a toy right now. I'd rather have an iPad or, you know, a tablet.
Got it. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our computer consultant with us today. If you have a question or maybe just a comment, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Have you had any, do you have a solid state hard drive? Has that failed or flaked out for you? That's one of the questions, but there's a whole lot more. Jim in Winchester has one for you, Pete. Let's go there. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks very much. I have a Dell Latitude notebook, X12. It's running Windows 7, Microsoft Office 2007. It's got an Intel Core TM2 dual CPM processor running at 1.4 gigahertz. And it really runs slow. I've taken everything off of the out of the libraries in order to try to speed things up. And yet the hard drive says that I have only 49 of 111 gigabytes free. I really don't want to throw the thing away. Wonder if there's anything I could do. Could I essentially take everything off and reinstall it? Any way to actually get it so that it's I'm not sitting waiting like they used to do with the old Apple computers with a cup of coffee icon?
Yeah.
How much RAM do you have in the system?
I don't know. How do I know that?
If you click on the start button and go to computer and right mouse click on that and go to properties, it'll give you some basic information about the computer, the operating system, the version you're running, and it should show you the amount of RAM that you have.
Okay.
How old's the system?
You know, probably 4 or 5 years, maybe a little more.
Do you remember if you bought it at max capacity with memory?
No, I don't know if I did.
Because what I would recommend doing is you could probably, most of the laptops are either one or two slots for memory, most cases two, where you can actually pull out the memory that came with it and replace it with larger chips. So I would recommend maxing out on the RAM in the system. That's going to definitely improve the performance of your system.
Okay.
And then as far as drive space, we talked about this for a long time with XP Windows 7. If you haven't already done this, if you right mouse click on your recycle bin, click on properties, you want to resize your drive. The default on Windows 7 is like 10% of your drive. So you want to bump that down to about 1% for your recycle bin because the operating system is allocating for that.
Suddenly you have 9% more.
Right. And then, so if you do the math, you know, 10% of 111 is 11 gig that it's eaten up. So you're going to, you know, bring that down. And the other thing is, again, if you right mouse click on your computer, the properties, and then go to system protection and look under system restore, or if you click on start and then accessories and then system tools and system restore, you should change the setting for what it's using from the default of 12% to 1%. So all of a sudden you're gaining back about 20% of your drive space.
Okay. So, I've done what you've suggested. I have 2 gigabytes of memory.
Okay. So if you have 2 gig, you should take a look online with what your what the manufacturer allows you to bump it up to. You might be able to max it out to 4.
Okay.
That's a good possibility, so I would definitely check into that. And you can either go to Dell. You know, I'm not saying not buying Dell memory, but you can also go to, like, I think Crucial is one. There are other places, buy.com, tiger.com, where you can look up your model and, you know, it'll tell you what kind of memory you need for it. And it's fairly straightforward. It's usually just undoing a screw in, underneath the flip side of the laptop. And make sure you do it in socks and you discharge any of your static when you're doing it. You don't want to, you know, static charge your the memory.
No.
And it, basically pay attention to how it comes out. There might be clips on the side, and you just simply just spread them off. They like kind of looks like they're kind of hooking onto the memory, and then you just slide it out and just pay attention to how it goes back in. You know, use if you have a smartphone, you can take a or a digital camera, take a picture of it. You know, see how it looks and the orientation, and then just make sure you put it back in the same way.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Jim. Here's another Jim from Eau Claire this time. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, you have succeeded in scaring me a little bit. I'm building a system for a lab.
Okay.
And this system is, we've got an ASUS motherboard, which is the Maximus 5 Extreme.
Okay.
And it has a special plug on it for MSATA drive. Mm-hmm. And we've got 64 gig of RAM and about five drives, so it's a total of about 10 terabytes of hard drive space. But we've got 256 card coming in that is going to put the system on it.
Yep.
It's a special card specifically for the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were talking about problems, are you talking about a plug-in type of a drive, or are you talking about one that is a board plugging directly into the motherboard?
I'm talking about one that would plug into, like, the cables, like an SATA drive.
Okay.
The ones that are cards where they have the built-in, well, let's say, for example, OCZ uses Sandstone controller. You know, they're built into the drives,
right?
But they're also on the cards. The ones with the cards I have that plug into a slot, I have very good success with those. Those have been very reliable.
Okay, now I feel better.
Yeah, the
now
ones that look better. Like a little deck, the ones that look like a little deck of cards, you know, that are basically replacing the hard drives. Those are the ones that I got a little fear with lately, because
this has a slot right next to the Wi-Fi card that plugs directly into the motherboard.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds like a heck of a system. What are you going to do with it? Because that's a lot of horsepower.
It's a lot of rendering for 3D animation stuff that we do here.
And, oh, neat.
Cool.
The computer I'm replacing is about 10 years old, so it's time to build another 10-year-old machine. So, something's going to last another 10 years before I have to replace it.
So I have an interesting question for you. So you're basing it on a Windows operating system, Linux, Unix?
It's on 8, and I have absolutely no experience with 8. I left XP, and I'm sorry to give it up, but I'm going to 64.
Well, you know, I have it's listed on my top 10. I've had that for like the last two or three shows, which is a link to the classic shell. So you can still use Windows 8 under the hood, but you can have your Windows 7 or XP interface.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you're using it for 3D rendering. I got to say, I would probably be looking at some kind of high-end Mac system that would probably give you more bang for the buck, because just, you know, with graphics and it just excels at that. And that's, you know, a lot of the movie studios, they used to use SGI, but, you know, they've moved over a lot of them to the Mac. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's something to consider too.
But you already made that. I'm just trying to make things easier and say, you know, there's that interface that you could switch to. So you still have Windows 8 under the hood, but you can have your interface to Windows 7 or XP the way you're used to it and still have fun driving it.
Good luck, Jim. Thanks for calling. Joey in New London, turn to you next. Hi, Joey.
Hi.
Hi.
I had Verizon as an internet source. I had 4G LTE recently came to my area. I live out in the country.
Okay.
And I had it for about 3 or 4 months, and I had this huge issue of data overages and crazy amount, 175 gigs.
Whoa.
So I was over my, yeah.
What were you streaming?
Nothing. I'm a graphic designer, and I was doing nothing. Actually, and I ended up troubleshooting the issue with Apple. I'm a Mac person.
Okay.
So I ended up troubleshooting the issue with Apple, and they actually wrote a letter, and they said that they, although they admit that the whatever something was uploading to them, there was, let's see here, they troubleshot it with me, and they isolated the steps, and they couldn't narrow down a direct application as the cause.
Okay.
But my iMac was, I've got two different computers, and my iMac was the one exhibiting the issue.
Okay.
So what happened here is I had alerts set up through my Verizon account, so I should have been alerted at 50% of usage, 75% of usage.
Right.
And nothing ever happened with that. So, like, the time this fails is, of course, during this. So I had no idea, and I received this $1,700 bill on a $60 a month charge. Yes. And now Verizon's asking me, of course, to pay that, and I ripped that Fusion device right off the house. I mean, it's gone at this point because I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid to use it. And I was so excited about this Fusion, and I don't know what caused the glitchy issue. I mean, this is a computer I've had since 2009 and had different internet services and never had a problem like this.
So let me ask you a couple of questions. So you're out in the country and you're saying Verizon's offering you this their Wi-Fi, extended Wi-Fi service for you to buy into.
Yeah.
And there's some limits to it. And you mentioned Fusion is the name of their product that's allowing you to bring their signal in, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So, did you have security set up on your connection?
Yes, I have a password.
Okay.
Password protected.
You know, there are people that can do these things, and one of them is called, the technique is called war driving, but there are people that can, work on decoding security and tapping into these things. Did you change your default password on your...
Never. No, it's just the password that was on the device originally. I never changed it.
See, so if you didn't change the password on that device, okay, I can look at that IP and I can get into it. And I can tell you for a fact, you can go on the internet and you can do a search and say, okay, I own this router. What is the default password? Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I've done this not only on mine, but I've done it on others and friends and things like that. So I would go to your system and I would say, oh, that's secure. And if it was broadcasting the SSID, and then I try and find the IP and the login for it. And then I try the default password and I say, oh, I'm in. So now I know how to get in, and basically, I could be across the street or line of sight of your device, and I could figure out how to tap into that, and then I could share your internet connection, and you wouldn't even know it.
But Apple already went in and looked at this, so they know it was something faulty on my device.
Okay. All right.
Right. Okay.
But I'm just...
Right. That. Yeah, I understand that can happen, and
okay.
I don't have anyone. There's like three houses by me and within 30 acres. You know what I mean? There's
sure.
nobody that lives around me, really.
Yeah. Okay.
One of them
All
hasn't
right.
been built yet, and the other one's foreclosed on. So, yeah.
Okay.
Standard Wisconsin.
Yeah. So, as far as, some of the cautions that you brought up, yeah, that is, surprising. And I have mentioned to AT&T because they told me something is related to bill pay. And I said, hey, if you guys would let me know like, the day after, not like wait a week or 10 days and then say, I got a problem with you,
They didn't notify me whatsoever. And
right.
the problem, this is my, so my dispute isn't necessarily that there wasn't something glitchy going on.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with it and what I want to make people aware of is the fact that, I was using it and I was counting on this My Verizon that I had set up. Which
right.
Verizon actually told me I didn't have it set up, and I have emails backing all that up, that it actually happened. They're saying they're not at fault whatsoever because I should have been going into my Verizon account. But I'm saying, well, you set me up with a backup, a system, so that I didn't have to do that, so I get alerted.
Right.
When I'm at 50% of my usage, and I never should have been over if I found out at that point, I could have stopped this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely think you have some good grounds for, you know, battling, fighting them because, you know, it's not right that you weren't notified that there were, you know, that you were getting close. And they do that with so many other devices. And, you know, if you, I would make sure you talk to a high level supervisor because they're, you know, if you just call in and talk to customer service, you're not going to get the results that you want.
Good luck. Thank you, Joey, for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer and your software today with Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. Join us at 800-642-1234 with your computer question. Or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Jim and Cable posted on my Facebook page and said, I'd like to know if Java is safe to use again or if it's even necessary. Not long ago, CNET and others suggested not getting the Java updates because the site has been hacked and updating could bring in a worm or a Trojan horse or some other unpleasant critter. I dumped Java, saw no change in internet browsing.
You know, there really aren't a lot of things that use Java. So, you know, it's usually pushing out a notice that there's been an update. It's really a matter, you know, of if you're using it. Yeah. And I run an old applet on my Infostar site that at some point I'm going to change it because it's old school.
Yeah.
There's just really not a lot out there that runs it. There's, you know, in fact, you know, there's Silverlight by Microsoft. You know, I don't know all the things that they use that for. You know, you got Flash and Shockwave. You know, you got all these things out there. And every time, you know, a new device comes out, Adobe's throwing, you know, updates out at you. Java is one of those. It's kind of like a legacy thing that, I don't even know what's running on my system that even uses that anymore. The only thing I know of is my applet on my website. I would say, you know, unless you've got something that you're experiencing using it, I would probably not bother updating it.
Email from Sue. I was going to copy a CD for a friend over the weekend. I put the CD in. I did this twice. One was rewritable. The other was not. And a pop-up came up and asked if I wanted to run it as a CD or as a jump drive. When I said CD, it started formatting the disk. I wiped out all the information I had on the CD. So I did another CD and opted for the jump drive and did the same thing. I'm not able to recover either of the CDs. When I put them in the drive to read, they tell me that they are completely empty. Help! I'm too afraid to put in another CD for fear of losing any more vital information.
Well, there are some. You might try. I'm not sure if this will work on one of those drive, like a CD, but I think it's called Recuver. Recuva. Puriforms is the company that puts that product out of, you know, for a Windows machine. But you can look for like disk recovery or data recovery software. And they have free versions of software and they work fairly well. Usually when I try to duplicate a CD, I'm using something like Nero. And there are some other applications for duplicating a CD because what it'll do is it'll prompt you for the original. Mm-hmm. And then it'll say, okay, now put in a blank disk. And then it'll make an exact duplicate for you. There are other levels of software that will write the ISO files, which is actually to create a bootable disk, which is different. So, you know, and that procedure is entirely different. So one option is to get software to try and recover and see if there's any way you can get anything off of those disks. The other is I would always try and copy, you know, if you're really being leery about doing it is I would put the disk in and then copy the data off of the disk to the hard drive. So at least you have the data from the disk before you attempt to do it again. But there are free programs out there off of CNET, CNET.com or downloads.com or, just going out there, there are people that have made these free programs that work quite well, you know, for just copying disks.
Erica in Green Bay has a question for you. Erica, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Okay, I guess my question is kind of a tandem two-part question. The first part is we've got a ginormous computer that we affectionately refer to as Megabox that we built like 6 or 7 years ago, and we love it. It's our workhorse that does everything, and being like 7 years old, it still runs like it's brand new.
Okay.
We've had like 2 laptops in the time that we've had Megabox, and we've gone through them both in that frame of time, and now we're just running on the one computer.
Okay.
Now that I see that the HP Split is coming out, and it's so shiny and fancy and new and wonderful looking,
okay,
I'm just wondering if it's worth getting the HP Split over any other kind of laptop just, you know, for the convenience of having these two computers, or if we should just go for like a normal run-of-the-mill laptop that might have better performance.
Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about the HP Split, because I'm not familiar with every single brand or thing that they put out there.
Well, that's the laptop that has the tablet
that
comes off, and you can run it as a tablet or as a laptop.
Okay. All right. So they've had those kind of models out for a while. So you're basically looking at replacing another laptop is what you're doing. But you want...
But if it came down to it and we didn't get a laptop, it wouldn't be the end of the world, because we have our desktop.
Okay. I guess what I would be looking at is, you know, price and performance, you know, in terms of how much you're going to invest, you know, is that tablet feature and, you know, it being a regular laptop versus, you know, I don't know what the price point on that is.
How much does it cost?
Yeah.
Like $400 to $700.
$400 to $700.
That's what's starting.
Right. So, you know, in that price point, you know, Microsoft puts out their tablet, which, you know, has a keyboard and can become, you know, just like a laptop kind of thing. And you can do that with an iPad. When you're looking at something like that, I would probably compare all three of those in, you know, in terms of horsepower, memory, storage, you know, and see what you're getting for your investment. You know, because if you're looking for the tablet convenience, you know, the other products have been out there for a while. As far as HP, you know, jumping into the tablet, they've had some higher price tablets that were quote unquote laptops, but not the tablet technology of today. So, I would probably compare all three of those and see where it fits in. And, you know, make your decision based on the comparisons. And also, you know, go to a place like CNET.com or PC Mag, and I'm sure they've had their hands on it for reviews, and they might tell you some of the pros and cons, and you might want to know those before you jump in as well.
Yep.
Sure. Okay. I just had one more question, if you have time.
Sure.
With that first computer that I was talking about, it's probably, you know, 7 years old. It still runs like it's brand new.
Right.
It had maybe one tune-up or something in the last 7 years, and we put like one new fan in it. Do you think, you know, based on just that information alone, we have a few more years left on it, or like how soon do we need to start thinking about building a new workhorse PC?
My guidance on computers is that they are appliances, and some of us are lucky and some of us are not. And so far you've been very lucky.
Very lucky.
I can tell you, comparing it to appliances, I know in my neighborhood, the homes were built at the same time, and all the GE dishwashers went out with all of them went out within 2 years of each other. They lasted approximately 12 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you have another 3 years left, maybe you have another 6 months, but, you know, they all have moving parts, and, you know, parts fail, and, the supply chain, you know, is limited in terms of where you may be able to find, you know, the parts for it, but it sounds, you know, knock on wood, so far you're lucky and, you know, enjoy it.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Erica. And Kathleen in Racine has a question. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I hope you can give me some advice here. I will be leaving the country and teaching. And I don't want to take, I've got an iPad right now, a laptop. But I don't know what I should be bringing with me. I don't want to be bringing this with me. I'd like something smaller, not too small, because I'm going to have to be doing lesson plans on it. And I just need something that will give me, you know, internet, of course, email, pictures. I don't do anything heavy on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was suggested Chromebook. I don't know. There's so many things out there. And I'm at a loss.
Okay. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, I'm going out of the country, and I use a netbook, and I've had it for years. It's a little 10-inch screen, and, you know, it has built-in Wi-Fi. You can hook it up hardwired to a network. It's got a keyboard. It's made by Toshiba, and there are other companies that make it. The thing is, you know, it's a smaller screen. It's a Windows 7 starter version, you know, versus the full version. Where I'm going with this is, some of these netbooks, they work well, but you start looking at the price point on the netbook and it might be $299, $349. And then you look at a laptop that has maybe a 14-inch screen or a 13.3-inch screen, and, you know, on sale with, you know, twice as much memory and twice as much storage, or maybe 1.5 as much storage, and it costs you $50 more. And the keyboard's a little bigger and the screen's a little bigger, you know, so you kind of get into that kind of, and, you know, if you're going to be overseas for 6 months, you know, you might want to pay a little extra for a little bit more comfort. I'm traveling with an iPad and a little netbook, you know, but I'm not going to be doing a lot with them, but I have them with me just in case.
Be gone long.
Yeah, but you're going to be using it for lesson plans and, you know,
that's
things. You know, so you want to be comfortable typing it and looking at it. So,
right, exactly.
You know, so look for a compromise between the netbook and a real full-blown laptop, and you'll probably find something that has, you know, a 14-inch screen that has enough memory, enough horsepower, and you feel comfortable with it. Probably. You know, you'll have to get a case for it, but I think you'd be happier in the long run based on what you're going to be doing overseas than someone taking something smaller but not doing as much with it.
And where are you traveling to, Kathleen?
Well, it looks like China.
Oh!
Not real sure yet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing English as a second language, and I am working on China. So,
you will, I'm sure, enjoy yourself very much. I had a friend who taught English as a second language in Japan and really enjoyed herself. So hopefully you'll have that same experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I will. I know I will.
So hope we helped.
Thanks, Kathleen. Appreciate the call. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. She's going to have a great experience.
Yep.
I can tell. Randy and Kadat, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a gateway computer that's about 6 years old with Vista installed.
Okay.
And it really has some glitches in it now. I spend more trying to get it to come up than I do using it. And it has really been a problem to use since the day I got it. And I contacted a computer repair person, and they wanted to install Windows 7 in place of Vista.
Okay.
And I guess I'm wondering, by the time I pay $200 for that and his time and labor to iron out the other problems with it, would I be better off going to a Mac or
Okay.
Well, you know, Mac makes their little Mac Mini. I can tell you they work great.
Yeah.
They don't have a built-in, you know, DVD drive, but you can buy. I've bought one for $30 off eBay that just plugs into a USB port, and you'll have a DVD read-write drive for that. And then you just have to get the monitor. You could probably use the same. I'm imagining you probably have a VGA flat screen for your computer, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so you could probably use that. So, you know, those are about $500 in that price range. You just have to transfer whatever data, you know, it depends on the software that you're using in terms of, you know, converting over. If you're just using, you know, doing word processing, spreadsheet stuff, all that stuff's compatible. If you're doing bookkeeping, you know, you can find a, they'll be compatible. I'm sure, you know, if you're using some like QuickBooks or, you know, that kind of software, there are compatible versions for the Mac. If you're just doing, you know, web browsing and email, that's not going to be an issue. So it boils down to how, you know, what you're using on the the software using on the Vista computer. As far as investing $200 in, you know, I mean, if I was doing it, I'd be, you know, going on eBay and probably buying a cheap source of, you know, Windows 7 and backing up my data and then going and making sure I have all the device drivers and then reinstalling it and bringing it up to speed. And you know, it's going to take a couple hour, probably a couple hours of time to do that. And hopefully there are no other hardware glitches with it. I don't know all the specs on your system, but I could tell you that Windows 7 likes memory. So, you know, it may be underpowered. You may have to invest in a little bit extra RAM to boost it up. Whether it has, you know, 2 gigs of RAM, maybe bring it up to 4, it would definitely perform better. So, you know, it's kind of, you're in the middle there. You know, yeah. There are some bargains to be had with some Windows systems. Like I said, if you go online, whether it's eBay or Tiger or Buy.com or, you know, going to Best Buy, some open box sales, you know, where they might have some inexpensive computers, you know, Office Max, Office Depot, Staples like that. So
there you go.
Yeah, you got to weigh your options in terms of how much more you want to invest, whether, like you said, $200, maybe it might cost you three, then you're in the area looking at a new system.
Yeah, I'd be looking at a new system.
Especially with the age.
Yeah.
IRS gives us 5 years, realistic, you know, in 6 months, there's something already new out there.
So good luck, Randy. Thank you. Janice in Grafton, we'll get to you in just a second. I want to remind everybody that you are hearing Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, give out advice today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 with your computer question. Love to hear from you. And now let's go to Janice in Grafton. Janice, okay. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you. I have a printer that's started printing something after I had left the computer for a short time, and I had been on that email last week, but I hadn't gone over to that particular email, and all of a sudden it started printing when I was out of the room for, and it printed about 100 pages, and I didn't want that many pages. And what do I do to, it's a Hewlett Packard, what do I do to, I canceled after I'd started doing this, but I didn't get back there in time to cancel it while I was doing it. What do you do to prevent that?
Well, it sounds to me like what happened, it sounds to me like a little bit of user error and understanding how the computer works in relation to the printer.
Mm-hmm.
What goes on is when you have a 100-page printout, it's feeding it into memory and queuing it up to that printer. So it doesn't print right away. It's got to think about that. It's saying, wow, that's a lot of information coming. So there's a delay there. And when you go to print something, by default, unfortunately, it has typically all pages. And you have to change it to either select or say current page. So somehow you inadvertently just sent that to the print queue, and you know it. I don't know much about your computer, and you know if it's an older computer, it probably was choking on it. If it's a newer,
that's, uh, new, Windows 7, I think.
Okay.
It's about 6 years old.
Windows 7, 6 years old could be, you know, going, oh, my God, oh, my God. what did you do to me? You're just beating on me, and I can't take it, but I'll do it for you anyhow. Just let me think a little bit. And then it printed out those 100 pages.
I like to reuse things, but, oh, dear.
So what I'm saying is when you go to print something, pay attention to that little box that comes up, and
right,
you'll see that you can either pick the page that you're on or the number of the page. So usually what I do to play it safe is I do a preview, and I look at what it's going to do. And that, so I print, I do the print preview, and they go, okay, I only want pages 2 and 3. I don't want page 1. I don't need that. Because sometimes they break them down and they show you the ad on the first page, and then the stuff you really want is on page 2 or 3 or whichever. And then you select those pages.
Yep. There you go. Good luck.
Just being a little bit more cautious next time.
A funny incident. I don't think this can happen anymore. This is some years back. Somebody in athletics was going away for the day and put on the automatic, I'm not here, please leave a message.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody somewhere else put the same thing on.
I could just go
and
back.
They sent it on a Friday afternoon, and it went back and forth all weekend. Thousands and thousands of messages.
Yeah.
It took, I forget how many days, mm-hmm. it was to fix it.
Yeah, and there was also, actually, there was at one time a flaw in Microsoft Exchange server, and you could actually send out an email, and even though the email, it would say the email hasn't been received by this user, I'm sending it again. And it would send it like 150 to 200 times until the administrator from the Exchange server would shut it off because the glitch kept forcing a resend of the same email. So sometimes it's the software that does it, not only the users that do those things.
Oh, man. Gary and Rhinelander, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. Hey, guys. I got a question about like tablets and such, or iPads.
Yep.
I work with on my desktop, a program called Microsoft Street and Trips for doing a lot of routing.
Okay.
Am I able to put that onto something like a pad of some sort?
You can only put that on. How old is that? That program's been around for a while.
I bought it last year.
Okay. But I know it's been around for you know, many years. You can put it on a tablet if you have access to a tablet like probably something like a Windows 8 tablet. And, you know, I don't think you'd find a version for it that would run on the iPad. The HP Split was mentioned before. It might run on that. I would check for compatibility to run it on something like that. Or you might, you know, if the tablet interests you, you might want to check what applications that run like what you have in the Street and Trips program and see what's available for the tablet and whether or not that suits your needs. I know Google, you know, Apple and Google had a little bit of falling out because the Google Maps and the Google Earth and all this stuff originally with the iPhone was all married together. And then Apple said, yeah, we're doing our own thing. And that actually messed me up recently because Google sent me a notification that there was this new thing for my iPhone, and I was using it when I was traveling for looking for an address, and all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I just want to get to this place, and it's shoving it in my face saying, you know, Google now has got this thing going on. So to make your life easier, I would probably pre-research the features that you like if you're looking at a tablet to take with you, in the Streets program that you're talking about and see what's available for the tablet, and maybe it does it better for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm only able to use like an Apple product for the programs that I use for my company. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what you can do then is you can go to Apple's site, because Apple has an app store, and you can research in there and see, you know, what's available.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft probably, you know, they have the same thing for their tablet, and, you know, you can see what's running on their system as well.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you for calling. ND in Wausau. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
I have actually a couple of questions, but I think it boils down to my virus protection has expired.
Okay.
And one thing, I have Windows 7 and I have Office 2010. And as soon as I turn my computer on in the morning, a message pops up for SharePoint.
Okay.
That says, use SharePoint to its full potential because of a firewall setting that needs to be changed, etc. And one, I don't use SharePoint. I don't intend to. This is just my home desktop computer. I'm not using it at all. So it's more of an annoyance than anything.
Okay.
But my email, any attachments that come through my email, I try and open them, and a message pops up, and it says, a virus was detected, and your attachment was deleted. And then it has a link, says learn more, and you click on it. It's Microsoft, and it wants you to buy, you know, their virus software.
What is it naming specifically?
Do you know? You get a choice of 10, 20 different products, but it's a Microsoft website that it's automatically routing me to.
Okay.
And I had Security Essentials, you know, before.
Okay.
And so what I was, you know, I was like, okay, fine, I have to get new protection, whatever. But I thought that we had to uninstall the original first. And when I try to uninstall it, it says I don't have permission. And, you know, it's only my computer. I'm the only person.
Right.
So I'm in this loop kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, you could probably, the SharePoint is a Microsoft product, and you can probably go in and just simply disable that off of your system or uninstall it because, like you said, you're not using it, so it's, you know, not necessary. And that's done through the
control. It says I don't have administrative rights.
Okay.
To SharePoint.
What you could. When you log into your system, are you logging in with a password or anything?
No.
Okay. What I would do is go into your control panel and go under user accounts.
Uh-huh.
And you should take a look at what the settings are. And you might be able to just change it so that it's low security. You know, I don't know the exact settings on your computer, but when you install software, does it ask you questions about, you know, do you want to allow this to be installed?
Well, I can't honestly. I've never installed anything on it.
Okay. Well, you can change the user controls, so you may want to pull back on the security, and then it'll probably allow you to make some of those changes. The other thing is you could probably try starting it up in the safe mode, which might allow you to make some changes as well.
And how do you do that?
When you shut down your computer and then you bring it up, right before it's starting up Windows, you hit the F8 function key, and it gives you a choice to start up the computer in the safe mode. You might have to do it a few times to get the hang of it if you haven't done it before. I would probably look at installing some other antivirus program. They have free ones out there, AVG, Avast. They all work well. They're fairly significant downloads, so you need a pretty decent connection. Microsoft Security Essentials, I haven't used that in quite a while. It used to be MS Defender. Microsoft's got their hands in a lot of things, and the Security Essentials and the Defender, they were good at first, and then they kind of fell behind. So I think the other more dedicated products work better. I wouldn't go with Norton or McAfee because those just simply are large targets, and nothing is 100% secure with viruses. So you're more likely to have a breach when you have one of the larger names on your system than you are with, you know, some of those other programs. As far as the email attachments, you know, and viruses and things like that, those messages will probably go away once you've got a better product installed.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. He's going to be with us right up until 12:30 to answer your computer questions. He's got our top 10 list of great sites that you can go to, and we'll do all of that right after we take a look at the news. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking with Peter Green of Infostar.com, and at this juncture of the show, we always go to Pete for his top 10 list of sites. And what have you got for us today, Pete?
Okay, well, if you go to Infostar.com, click on Current, or go to the Top 10 Archives and scroll down to today's date, they're all there. And the next show will be Tuesday, the day after Labor Day, on September 3rd. So I've got that listed there. The first one is called Life Hacker, and I thought I would have had this up there before, but I did a search on my site, and it wasn't. And it's just tips, tricks, and downloads for getting things done. So it's a site to check out for that. HomeOwnershipHub.com, place for tips on your home and garden. So community to ask questions and see, you know, get some assistance out there. Next one is to create a free website. Plus, there are other plans that they offer you if you need new features. And I put another site to check out. Does the same thing. It's called Weebly, Weebly.com. And I have no affiliation with any of these sites at all. This next one, I was driving into town, and I just thought, you know, I hadn't put anything up about cars recently. And happened to see a Shelby Mustang, but not like the Shelby Cobra Mustang, but a Shelby Mustang. And so I went online. I was like, wow. So ShelbyAmerican.com is about their products. And what I find interesting is that they also have a Ford Focus that they do a Shelby to upgrade to. And then I thought, okay, there's other sites about trucks. So Ford-Trucks.com is an enthusiast site for classifieds, news, recalls, forums, and more related to Ford products. Then for Dodge puts out Viper. So there's ViperClub.org, and that's the next one. And again, it's an unofficial resource, and those are usually the good ones because that's where you find out some good information. So that's got forums, news, recalls, and stuff like that. And I'm not doing them all because you could go, I mean, we could do more than a whole show on all these. But the next one is Corvette Club of America. And this is the oldest one in the country, and it's since 1956. Wow. So there's got to be a lot of really cool stuff up there. I didn't have the time to look at all of it. And then this next one, so getting back to technology a little bit, it's called GlobalOGig.com, and it specializes in reporting statistics about various areas of the internet, stuff on HTML code, inbound and outbound linking, just a whole reverse IP internet protocol, just a lot of stuff out there. So that's a neat site to check out. Number 9 is called ParentFurther.com. And it's a resource about having a positive approach to parenting. And then I drive one of these, so I had to put this out there. It's called AudiTTCCA.com, and it's Audi TT Club of America. And again, you know, that's been around. It's actually been around since that car was made, starting in 1998. And to see the evolution of where it's been and what it's doing today, you know, I think the R8 is the version, the high-end version of that car, and that's way in the stratosphere for me and a lot of other people.
And all those available at Infostar.com. Just go. Yep. And to get, this is not a site, but it's an app that I just wanted to mention because I downloaded it myself. We were doing some picture hanging and doing some other things where a level was needed. And I
turned your iPhone into a level?
I got an app for free. It was a free app that makes your iPhone a level. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was, we were able to, you know, you're able to.
You hang in a door other than a picture.
Yeah, I think if you just went online and put, or I will go to your app place and just say, I want a level. I want to make a level app. There's like 50 of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, the apps out there are really pretty neat.
Oh, it was fun. Jolene in Janesville, thank you for calling. Hi.
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 I have a math question for you.
Okay.
I am an educator, and I build podcasts out of GarageBand, and I pair pictures with the words or the audio, and then I bring it into iTunes. And recently, when I upgraded iTunes, I lost all the pictures or the ability to display the pictures. The pictures are still there, but I can no longer get them to come up when it's playing through iTunes. And I guess along with that question is, can I go backwards on my iTunes version?
That's a good question. Usually going backwards with iTunes, I have not had much luck going that way. Apple usually just keeps pushing you forward. What I would probably do is do a search on GarageBand, the iTunes version that you're using, and picture display problem. And you're probably not alone. You probably might have to look at the answers and maybe how to rephrase it a little bit. But some of these glitches are, they don't own up to right away until they hear from enough people. So you're probably not alone. I mean, I had a problem with an upgrade to my Apple OS, and I had to dig deep and found out that they didn't want to admit to it that they had caused, you know, the computer to not work anymore.
Right.
You know, that it wouldn't.
Yeah, I've done a little digging, but I haven't found anything. But maybe it's just in the way I'm phrasing it.
Yeah. So what you need to, what the best way to put it is figure out how to ask the question better by reading your answers that are wrong. That are, you know, what is the thing that's missing that's getting you to the right answer. So, you know, picture not displaying iTunes and, you know, in the version of iTunes and GarageBand. I would put those all together and see what pops up, and then, you know, go to some of the forums and read, you know, what people are experiencing, and then also you might want to just call Apple Store and talk to one of their what they call gurus or geek people, and and say, hey, you know, how come these things are not interacting after I did this upgrade? And they may say, yeah, we noticed that glitch and we're working on it. Because I've seen software from accounting companies where I was experiencing a problem and, you know, I was like, I don't know how to fix this. It's not, you know, software I can jump into and get under the hood. And then a month goes by and all of a sudden, you know, I'm looking for the answer because it's still being a pain. And it's like, oh, well, we're fixing that with our next upgrade. you know, so unless they hear feedback on some of these weird problems, They won't fix them.
Yeah.
So they're relying on people you to have bad experiences and saying, you know, I can't change it in my preferences. I don't know where to find it in the software to make it work the way it was working, and it was working by default, and all of a sudden it's not. So they may not even know it's a problem until, I don't know, it hits 300 people or 500. You know, what do they consider the problem threshold?
Yeah.
You know, to put an engineer on it.
There
so, and I would contact the Apple store and see what they have to say too.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jolene. Chris emailed us from Trempolo. My mom just bought a new Gateway desktop with Windows 8. The question is, we've tried three different browsers to access her Gmail. All of them are saying they can't access the Gmail site after a successful login because cookies are not enabled. Any ideas on?
Usually by default, cookies are enabled. So, you know, checking and make sure the preferences do allow that. I don't know if that's a Windows 8 glitch. I haven't heard whether or not Windows 8 has come out with their upgrade or not yet. You know, that's usually pretty newsworthy stuff. But I've been involved in moving lately, so I may have missed that. Usually by default, that's something that's pretty, you know, straightforward. And Google Gmail can be a little touchy, you know, like what they're experiencing. You know, you could try going through another, you know, not being logged into the Google Gmail account. And going to something like mail2web.com and just testing to make sure that you're able to get into that account, and, you know, so that it is valid and is working, or checking it from another computer. But from a Windows 8 system, I don't know if that's a Windows 8 glitch or not. Maybe changing the system to the classic shell and allowing you to look at the software in a different way, you know, might improve things too.
Joanne in Lac de Flambeau. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I've got Windows Vista and I have an HP printer. And the more I think about it, I think it started after I changed to Gmail. If I want to print an email, it'll only print like a half a page, and then it stops. Like, for instance, my sister sent me a recipe. It was not an attachment. It was just part of the email.
Right.
Well, it wrote the first part, hi, how are you, all that good stuff, and then it had the name of the recipe, and then it stopped.
Okay. What I would try doing is, you're probably just using one browser on your system. Have you tried it with another browser?
Because I have not.
Okay, because Gmail is a web-based email system, and maybe there's some setting in the web browser that you're using. So if you're using like Internet Explorer, maybe try Google Chrome or Firefox, Mozilla, Safari, which is an Apple product, but it's also available for Windows. And try and see if you're getting the same glitch, you know, where it's not printing correctly. Or upgrading, you know, the browser that you're using. Maybe for some reason, all of a sudden, it started going haywire on you and, just kind of flipped a bit in it and it needs to be upgraded.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are some of the options out there. But I would definitely try it with another browser first, to see if it's the same glitch. Now, the other thing I would also check is, if you try printing with some other application, are you getting, can you print out like a 2-full-page document or letter?
Yes.
With something else?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So I would check another browser and see how that works.
Yep.
Okay, I'll give it a whirl.
Okay. All right, thanks, Joanne. Arlene in Madison. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, I have a new Nexus 7 tablet that's just under 2 months old, and I want to know how hot they should get when you're using them.
Not so hot that they probably burn your hand or give you any kind of degree burn. but tablets, they do get warm. In fact, what was interesting is I left my iPhone in the car, and I came back to it, I don't know, a couple hours later, and it said it gave me a warning message and said the phone's too hot to use.
Oh.
So I had never seen that before. So
this seems to be diagonally from the little on and off switch, mostly in that mm-hmm. one corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I must admit that it's more prevalent when games are being played.
Okay. What I would do is I would actually check online and, you know, look in, just kind of ask that question about, you know, the model of the tablet you're using and, heat problems or heat concerns. And you might want to, maybe either email or you could probably call the manufacturer and see if there are any issues that they know of as related to heat problems or any precautions they may want to throw your way. Mm-hmm. Or you may be able to find that online at their website as well.
Yeah, yeah.
What I was going to do until I heard you on the air today. Would be my number one choice. Yeah, my 16-year-old grandson put some games on there.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm thinking, well, if worse comes to worse, I could just take them off. But
yeah, games definitely push computers to their limits.
Okay.
If you were to go online and research like high-end computers, those are considered, gaming systems are the ones that really push the video, the processing to the limits, and they put cooler. You should see the coolers that they put in water cooled computers, giant tubes, these heat sink devices. I mean, you can buy a case for a computer that, let's say, costs you maybe $80 or $100, and then you could add more to that in just the cooling products for the CPUs and everything that goes into the gaming system. So, you know, they push the tablets the same way.
So good luck to you, Arlene, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, man.
I'm not kidding. Water-cooled computers. I'm not kidding. Fluid-cooled computers. Absolutely.
Absolutely amazing. Donna in Bailey's Harbor. Hi.
Hi. I think, a network adapter card problem. I have a Dell XPS laptop. It's less than a year old. Has a Windows 7. I've talked to the Dell Techs numerous times, and I have, loaded, reloaded new drivers and such, but what happens is if there's a really strong, like, 5-bar connection, I can get on without a problem, usually, but if it's anything less than 3, it won't connect on a wireless situation. So does that seem like it is, can a network adapter card be, like, partly working?
Usually you should be able to hook up with 3.
Okay.
When you get into 1 or 2, then, it could be an issue. What you might want to consider looking into, someone called me earlier this week or last week, was saying they were having problems with a laptop. What I would recommend doing is looking into maybe getting a USB Wi-Fi, network adapter and plugging that in and see how that performs, because at least then you have a backup if you're not getting a strong signal and you've done all these updates and stuff and it's not working. The other thing you might want to look into is sometimes the router itself can be the cause of the problem, and there might be a firmware update for the router. And what that requires is that you log in as the administrator. And there's usually some kind of interface, sometimes even a wizard, that will step you through doing the firmware update, which is, either downloaded to your computer or maybe to a thumb drive and it's plugged into the router. There are different ways for doing that, but I've seen that cure those kind of problems as well.
Would that be the case on a on public internet interfacing? I've used like another. I've been trying to figure this out, so I'll have another computer.
Yeah,
and it'll go on, and my iPod will go on these connections where this computer won't.
Yeah, if you're having a problem consistently with public as well as, you know, other routers being the same kind of performance issues,
right.
I would definitely look at probably if it's under warranty, then it's something you could probably send back. If you get the USB adapter as a backup and it works better, you know, you've kind of got the proof that, hey, this really isn't good and needs to be fixed.
Right. Is that just a, you know, a small part, or is that like a major?
No, they're usually fairly small, and they're probably in the $20 to $30 range.
Okay.
If you're patient, you can go on eBay and get them from China for probably less than 10 bucks, and they take about 2 weeks to get.
All right.
So you have some options.
Thanks.
I refer to eBay because sometimes you can't find this stuff when you need it.
Yeah.
And if you plan ahead, you know, you can get it.
Thanks, Donna. Mary and Racine, do you have a quick question?
Yes. I have a bar that comes up on the bottom of my page when I go to a web page, and it says something about add-ons and that, you know, with all these add-ons, it takes longer for the page. How do I get rid of this little thing, this add-on thing, and I don't even know what they are?
Add-ons are, when you're going to a web page, it's looking to push content to you, and it's basically saying you don't have what you should in order for us to allow us to show you what we want to show you. So by enabling the add-on and adding it to your web browser allows you to have a better experience of the web pages that you're visiting. So, for example, if you're using Windows 7 and you have Internet Explorer 8, well, now there's Internet Explorer 10 out.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some of them already have the add-ons updated so that you don't have to, you know, mess with those things. And not all add-ons work with all browsers. In other words, some of them are not all up to speed. And they're not the same version. So it varies.
Yeah. Something to think about, Mary.
But
thank
it's about
you.
Web.
Yeah.
It's about web experience. You know,
yeah,
what pages you're going to and what you're trying to, you know, see and enjoy.
Yep, absolutely. And thank you for calling, Mary. And Pete, thank you. You'll be back the day after Labor Day.
That's right. And boy, that tells me fall is almost
closed by. School's ready to start, or getting ready to start.
Thanks, Larry.
My God. Thank you, Pete. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. Dr. Mike Fiore comes by from the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention tomorrow and talk about those new electronic cigarettes that are out. And then we'll take a look at sleep disorders as well tomorrow. So a little medical shows tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.